to drive the lane. Crosses up Van Vliet. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go off the wave, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3.
And live from the campus of Illinois State University, this is the Red Zone. Good evening, everybody. We thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday afternoon. Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer, Leo Stauder with you. Boys, how are we feeling?
Feeling pretty good here. This is pretty much the highlight of my week socially, where I get to leave the apartment and do something other than schoolwork. So I'm pretty stoked to be here.
Well, Joey, how are you feeling, man? It's good to have you back in the station.
I appreciate it. So sorry for not responding. I'm having some weird delay right now as we're talking, but that's all right. I can power through. I can hear both you and Leo, because finally I am back in the studio, and let me tell you how good that feels to finally see you guys in person, even though there's a big glass wall between us, Freddie, and then Leo's in the next room over. It still is just a whole different experience being back, and I'm so excited.
Well, we got a great show for you guys tonight. College sports are finally back. We got some really exciting Redbird news these past couple of days, both with the men's and women's basketball team releasing their conference schedule and football as well. So let's just dive right into it. We saw yesterday men's and women's basketball finally back with the Missouri Valley Conference announcing the conference schedule. So as of now, the conference schedule is set for both of these teams. I guess we can start with men's basketball. They were here. All three of us were on the call in St. Louis when we fell to Drake. So Redbirds are trying to seek some vengeance, especially since they really want to get back in the postseason.
And my only concern with that is I don't know how well they're going to be able to seek vengeance with a depleted roster. I was looking at it before the show, not a whole lot of people getting added to what was already a middle-of-the-road roster in the Missouri Valley. So it is nice that they're going to start their season with Evansville and Southern Illinois, which should be two fairly easy wins to kind of get their season going. But I just don't know how much faith I'm going to have when they get to heavy hitters like you and I and Loyola.
Yeah, this definitely isn't as deep of a roster.
Yeah, and we see just kind of with things going on with the Redbirds and
this definitely isn't as deep of a roster as we've been used to seeing in recent years. I think there's going to be a lot of weight put on DJ Horn to kind of step into that role we saw Zach Copeland take last year, where he's going to have to lead the team in scoring every night. And it's just going to be, I think it's going to be a lot of the same issues, where it's going to be depth scoring and players coming off the bench where the Redbirds are outmatched by other teams. But if they could maybe get players like Antonio Reeves or Abdu Jai to take steps forward, that could certainly help the team.
Promotional materials for your...
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation. We apologize, we're having some technical difficulties in the station. We don't know what's going on, but we're trying to resolve it. We're doing the best we can, but try and get back into it. We were in the middle of talking about Redbird basketball as it's preparing to tip off their conference season in late November, and we were starting with men's basketball and how they were trying to respond given everything that's going on. Like we said, we were there when they fell to Drake and Arch Madness, so they're really trying to get back to the postseason.
And I just don't know how much faith I have
in the Redbirds, like I was saying before, you know, we all cut out and went to break, but they just have not really made a lot of steps recruiting-wise. They have a couple new freshmen coming in, but the problem with freshmen is you don't know how they're going to fit into the system, so it's going to be a very young team that Dan Mueller's going to have to try to figure out, and this is a year where, and we've been saying this, I swear to God, since I've been at ISU, but this is a year where Dan Mueller needs to prove himself and show that he is a capable coach at this level, because his teams always seem to falter in big moments, and now he's going to have a team that's not proven in those big moments. So if he can't coach this team to the success that Redbird fans are accustomed to, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more Redbird faithful calling for his job.
Yeah, and just looking at the roster real quick, pretty much the only upperclassmen that have any kind of experience the Redbirds have to offer are Dedrick Boyd and Keith Fisher, and those were good complementary players they had last year, but they aren't the players, besides, I'd say Fisher maybe, where you could expect them to take on the roles as the go-to players for the Redbirds. I mean, I really think they're just going to have to rely heavily on DJ Horn. He's the only proven, the only proven player the Redbirds had, where you could look at his performance last year and think that he's definitely going to be something.
Especially with the loss of some of their seniors like Zach Copeland, you know, you're going to need some of those young guys to step up. We saw DJ Horn and Antonio Reeves kind of start to take that role as freshmen, so step up as veterans and see what's going on. Keith Fisher as well, if he can try and get something going, especially trying to be that big man down low in the paint where you can try and draw fouls late in the game.
And you brought up a really good thing, or a really good point about Reeves. I thought he was one of the most exciting freshmen to watch last year, and even in the postseason, he had some nice numbers. So he could be a guy that Mueller could look to lean on a little bit as more of a veteran presence now that this will be the second year under his belt. But I just don't have a whole lot of confidence in the Redbirds men's team making a huge splash in the Missouri Valley this year.
Yeah, I definitely think it's just going to have to be, we're going to have to look at it as a quote-unquote rebuilding year where they're going to lose some games to some teams like Northern Iowa or Drake that are just loaded with veteran talent, because the Redbirds definitely will have some players that could show promise, but they just don't have that veteran depth that can help them hang with the elite of the Missouri Valley Conference.
And so I want to move over quick because we got a little messed up on time, so we got to move through this quick. But the women's schedule is also released, and I just want to get your guys' thoughts on that, because I think the women are a much more promising team this year than the men.
I definitely think so. It was really unfortunate that things happened when they did last year, because the women's basketball team was trending on such an upward trajectory. I believe I studio hosted like two of their last three home games against Loyola and Missouri State, and those were both huge statement wins for the team. And they were just looking so – they were definitely the hottest team in the Valley going into the conference tournament. And it's a complete shame they didn't get to play that tournament, because I really think they could have escaped with a win and a national tournament berth. So I think the Redbird women are going to be playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, where they know they were slighted out of something special last year. So they definitely have some extra motivation going into this season.
And like the men, the women also lost a couple of really good seniors, leaders on that team. But they still have some of their best players. They've still got Paige Saylor, Mary Crompton, Lexi Kudelka, and others who are proven contributors who really took that next step last year, especially when the women were on that hot streak. So hopefully they can keep that momentum going, like you said, Leo. And this looks like a very promising season for the women. And I'm glad that we're going to get to call these games, because I'm itching to watch some live sports again.
Yeah, I think as well. Yeah, I think we're all excited to call it. Chances are we're going to be calling these games. As we mentioned, the conference schedule is released, not the game times yet. But something else kind of crazy is that no fans are going to be in Redbird Arena. That's going to affect the atmosphere a ton.
I agree, but I think that if that all comes down to, because we've seen in all the professional sports that are going on right now, except for a couple football stadiums, but most of them have no fans in attendance. And so I think that really comes down to the players and the coaches being able to keep that intensity up, even when you don't have that crowd roaring behind you. You'll have to find a way to dig deep and remind yourself, okay, this is a real game, there are real stakes, rather than this is just a scrimmage or a practice. And I think that's going to speak a lot to Dan Mueller and Christian Gillespie's abilities to motivate their team and get them to play hard.
Yeah, I think it'll actually probably help the men's team not having fans in the crowd, because there were some crowds last year that got pretty hostile, especially when the Redbirds were losing by some embarrassing margins. But I think it definitely does come down to the coaching, like you said, Joey, where how can they prepare themselves? Everybody's probably going to have to dig deep a little bit more to figure out what their motivation is, what gets them fired up, because you lose that adrenaline that comes with the crowd noise.
We'll definitely have to see what happens. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some Redbird football on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Only fitting that our QB1 brings us back, Brady Davis, because earlier today, about two, three hours before the show, the Missouri Valley Football Conference released their conference schedule. It's going to be 8 games. Redbirds are finally back.
And let me tell you, that was quite the shock walking in to do the show. And I was the last one in the studio today. And I walk in, and Leo and Freddie are both like, "Hey, there's a change in the show today." And I was like, "What's going on?" And they're like, "Missouri Valley football schedule got released." And I was so shocked, because I did not see this coming. I didn't know whether, and we talked on the show a couple weeks ago, weighing the pros and cons of actually playing this season for the players. And I guess in the FCS, it's a little different, because you don't have as many players who are hopeful for the NFL. But regardless, I'm so excited. And we were talking before, we are going to have women's basketball, men's basketball, and football all going on at the same time. That's like the cornucopia heaven of sports right there. I'm so excited.
It's going to be a busy, busy spring.
Yeah, but I got a staff we're confident in, or we have a staff that I'm confident in, so I think it's going to be a great spring for WZND and for Illinois State Athletics.
Yeah, it's almost going to be hard to remember that we're here for school, too, because there's going to be so much sports going on that might get lost in the rearview window, but we'll stay on focus with that, too.
And so my big question going into the football season is a big James Robinson-sized hole in the offense. We've been talking about James all year and how good he's been in Jacksonville, but we haven't really looked at ISU and what they have done to replace him. And I just took the liberty before the show of writing down all the rostered running backs we have, and there are 8 of them. And I think I only recognize one name, Jeff Proctor, who got any sort of touches last year. And if I remember correctly, he was more of a James White-esque receiving back. And maybe his touches will go up running north-south because James Robinson isn't here. But that's a big part of the offense that they're going to have to figure out if they want to have the same success they did last year.
Yeah, another running back that I saw, I believe it was in the Indiana State game, was Kevin Brown. He'll be a sophomore from East St. Louis High School, a traditional power in Illinois. He was kind of 5'8", 170 pounds, so more of a smaller but explosive back. Maybe the Redbirds could try something a little bit like what you see with the Bears, how they have a traditional running back and then maybe a gadget back, where he could be sort of like a Tariq Cohen, maybe a slot receiver slash a pass-catching back, where I think the Redbirds maybe are going to have to change their offense a little bit around the talent, because there is only one James Robinson, and so that power running offense they had last year might not work with their current talent. They might have to put a little bit more emphasis on Brady Davis, because we've seen he's had some rushing ability too.
Yeah. And he has had some rushing ability. The thing that scares me, though, is if you get into this RPO West Coast style offense, Brady Davis last year went down for the season with a bad leg injury, and he's getting up there in age. I don't want to see them swing him out wide or send him plunging up the middle when we saw them come off the rails last year when he got hurt. He, even though James Robinson was the most productive player on that offense, Brady Davis was obviously a vocal leader, obviously somebody the offense rallied around, and I think losing him would be way too far a risk to take to incorporate that a little more. I think, if anything, they're going to have to maybe focus on the passing game, which wasn't all there last year, but I think that would be more important than getting Brady Davis some touches on the ground.
Yeah.
You can go ahead,
yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, we saw in the playoffs last year, once Brady Davis went down, Bryce Jefferson was in, and basically 90% of the plays, over 90% of those plays, was James Robinson on the ground trying to do what he can do against Southeast Missouri State, Central Arkansas, and then North Dakota State. And then you mentioned Jeff Proctor. I don't know if he's going to be able to fill that gap, because it's going to be a big responsibility for him and just the lack of playing time for him. But with Brady Davis as well, I believe it's his sixth year of eligibility in the NCAA. Like, I think at some point the NCAA has got to be like, hey, we can't keep giving you more years of eligibility. Like, you're going to be a grandpa here. Come on.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit about the passing game, both of you have. And I think part of the reason why the Redbirds were so run-heavy last year was because they were, for the most part, all season playing without their top three wide receivers, where Austin Nagel, Andrew Egger, and Braxton Haley all had pretty much season-ending injuries. So I think that dilapidated the Redbird passing attack, where you weren't as deep as they would have liked to be. So maybe now that you have Brady Davis healthy and some healthy options at receiver, you could open up the playbook more and get more creative. And maybe, I know the Redbirds have seemed pretty high on Jack Baltz at maybe being the potential successor to Davis at quarterback. Now, he's a 6'5" redshirt freshman from Lincoln Way East High School, one of the powerhouses in Illinois. So if they could maybe – he's a bigger quarterback too. So if they could develop him into like a Josh Allen light type quarterback, that could maybe help where they could be a heavy pass team in the future.
And I think it would really help this offense if they had somebody – behind the helm who's more mobile than Brady Davis. And if Baltz could be that, I think it'd be a huge benefit to this offense, because it's going to have to be more creative play calling on the part of Brock Speck, because they don't have the guy where you can say, okay, run through a gap and get 4 yards in the first down every time, like James Robinson was. So I think that now that they have to change, I think it's going to be a lot more creative play calling that's going to help the Redbirds ultimately win games.
And kind of going along with that, the Redbirds had a myriad of coaching changes going on, people shifting gears a little bit. They're taking on more than one responsibility. A big one, though, is that Kurt Beathard is no longer with the football program. And as of that, it is Coach Muhammad Langford and C.J. Irvin stepping in to share the offensive coordinator responsibilities.
And I think that will also be very fresh, because as we've talked about, all of the roster changes on the offense and the turnover that they've had, I think it's good to get a fresh perspective in, some guys with some new ideas to maybe reinvigorate this offense if they're looking for somebody else to be, you know, that next man up and carry the weight of the offense.
Yeah, I think it's definitely this could be the opportunity they've been looking for to maybe change things up, where you bring some different minds in to let them take a look at it. And both of them were with the program before, but maybe they didn't have the say as much last year since they were working under Beathard. So maybe they could contribute some new ideas. And it is worth noting that they are pretty much inexperienced coaches. They're both pretty young. Irvin's a former player. He was on the team that made it to the national championship in 2015. So they may not have as much experience, but they could make up for that in some more creativity, and maybe they're more new school football type minds.
And especially if you have Irvin, who is a product of Brock Speck football here at ISU, he knows what it takes to get this Redbirds team to a place where they can be successful. And I think his experience on the team already will be of great help when kind of designing this offensive attack that the Redbirds are going to use spring 2021.
Yeah, especially with some of the offensive guys. Andrew Edgar is coming in as well. I believe this is going to be a senior season. Kasper Rutkiewicz, another name that was trying to build a reputation for himself. So I think trying to get the ball rolling with them and really try and get that chemistry going with them to get that dynamic duo, so that you can really test the depth of your wide receivers, because it's going to be interesting trying to adapt to a new kind of offense, especially since all we did, or the majority of what we did, was just run the ball last year.
I'm very excited to watch this football team after how good we were last year. And we've talked a little bit about the transfers that we've lost going into this year, but I think we're still going to be a very good football team. And we start off our season February 20th against UNI, which should be a tough matchup. And then we've got March 13th, North Dakota State. And then the matchup that I'm most excited for is we are hosting South Dakota, which will be a homecoming for Normal's own Carson Camp, who is a high school football legend here last year, got recruited by South Dakota to play against the Redbirds in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, and so that will be very fun to watch him come home. And hopefully the three of us are on that call, because that would be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool to see him, a standout quarterback at Normal West, being able to go to the Missouri Valley Football Conference for football. I mean, couldn't even imagine. He probably grew up, even before high school and maybe in high school as well, going to Redbird football games, seeing what college football could be like, and all of a sudden gets a call from an MVFC school saying, hey, we want you. So we'll see what has to happen with him.
We'll be very excited. I'm over the moon. I cannot stress enough. I'm so excited for ISU sports to be back. I'm so excited. This segment, I'm jazzed up right now, I'm telling you.
We got men's basketball coming back, women's basketball coming back, football, soccer and volleyball are most likely coming back. They haven't released their schedule, but it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a busy spring. I think it's going to be a positive way to try and end 2020 and go into 2021. But that brings us to our Red Zone question of the week. Which Redbird sport are you most looking forward to watching? We want to hear your thoughts below. We got the men's basketball, women's basketball, football, or other comment below. Please reply to the tweet as well if you got any thoughts on how you think these teams might do this season. We would love to hear from you. We'll take a break. When we come back, we sat down with our news and sports guest to talk some NBA playoffs. You're listening to The Red Zone, the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. All right, Jessica. This is how we're done.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Every week we bring on a news and sports guest, and this week Carter Getty is on the show. Carter, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Anthony. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
No problem. And each week the news and sports guest gets to choose a topic that they want to talk about on the show, and given everything that's going on with the heat of the NBA playoffs, the Miami Heat, the way they're going and making it a series against the Celtics. So, Carter, it's your segment. Take it away.
Absolutely. I think what the Heat are doing in these playoffs has been quite astonishing. Coming into the playoffs, sweeping the Pacers immediately, that series, it didn't get close at all. It was an obvious sweep through that. And then go straight into the Bucks, who were the number one seed in the East, and they go in and beat them 4-1. I don't think anybody expected that. And at one point, they went up 3-0 in the series. So that was even the crazier part. It was almost another potential sweep. And it's all been centered around Jimmy Butler. And he's kind of the veteran, as well as him and Goran Dragic and Andre Iguodala. Those guys are kind of leading the charge for these younger guys. We got Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Bam, Kendrick Nunn, like all these guys that were supposed to be role players, but are filling shoes that nobody expected them to. So what they're doing in the playoffs right now is just, it's crazy. Like the numbers they're putting up, the series that they're stringing together, It's been insane. I'm sure you guys have been watching too. What have your thoughts been on it so far?
I said this literally every show we've talked about the NBA playoffs, but since the beginning of the season, I loved the Heat. I thought they had such a good energy, and I've always thought that Jimmy Butler has serious star power and is never in the right situation. And so it's exciting to see what he can do now that he is in that right situation. I have just been so impressed, because I didn't think they'd make it past the Bucks, and I'm a Pacers fan, but I knew that the Pacers were not going to hold a candle in the bubble. So I've just been so impressed. And to preface, we are recording this segment with Carter Wednesday night. This is 7:13 p.m. So game four is about to start. But I think that if the Heat come out really strong like they have in the past couple games and really give it to the Celtics, I think this could be a 4-1 series easy.
Absolutely. No, I see the Celtics winning this either 4-1 or 4-2. And then I see them going deep into the final round of the playoffs, either forcing a game six or a game seven with whoever they end up playing.
You talked a little bit about the roster makeup of the Heat when you were starting, and what I've kind of noticed is they have Jimmy Butler. That's their tier A player, lead player, but we've seen more and more where the NBA is going into this super team model where you need to have like three, four legit blue chip players to contend. But it seems like the Heat aren't doing that. They've been just having a very good supporting cast of what might be defined as role players, but that played a bit together well as a team. Do you think that could possibly signify a shift in the way front offices want to construct their teams?
I think it absolutely could. I think what the Heat are doing right now are taking solid players and are actually attaching it to a goal, like a concept that they are focusing on, and that Jimmy Butler is kind of leading these younger guys into, hey, like, we're talented, we're young, we got the bodies that we need right now, and they're just stringing together wins. I feel like no matter what game that they've been in, they've never been completely out of it. Like within a couple possessions, they're either right back into it or they end up taking the lead back from a deficit that they had. So I do think it could definitely change the way that management and front offices look at how they construct their teams throughout the future of the NBA.
And I think that no matter what, just having the depth that the Heat do, it is a recipe for success, because obviously you've got Jimmy Butler, who the team kind of revolves around, but it's so deep. Some guys you mentioned, they've got Iggy and Tyler Harrell, but then also guys like Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn, other guys who can step up and be very effective role players. This is just such a deep team that I think they really pick up a lot of their points when the other team doesn't have all their starters on the floor. And because, like, if you look at Boston, they're a super top-heavy team with guys like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward. But when those guys are off, the Heat have the advantage coming off the bench. So that's really what I think creates these mismatches and why the Heat are so successful, is because their depth allows them to be in situations to win every single game, like you were saying.
Absolutely. And when people are focusing on Jimmy Butler, trying to lock him down, make sure he is not an impact in the game, that's when guys like Tyler Herro will come in and, I'm not sure exactly which game it was, but he came in and dropped 16 points or something in the first quarter. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, dudes are just coming out of nowhere and are performing at a level that we have not seen young players like this perform at in the NBA recently.
Yeah, we've seen it. Even with the Heat, it's exciting that they're able to play at this level. I don't think there's been as much success the Heat have had since head coach Eric Spoelstra, who's still with the team, brought the big three into Miami with LeBron James and Chris Bosh to join Dwayne Wade. And when they had it, but you mentioned it with the depth on the team, there's so much, and it's really just kind of testing them. And I agree with Jimmy Butler as well, that he finally has got a place where he's thriving and really stepping up. And another player I want to bring up is Bam Adebayo. He made that huge block, I believe it was in game one in overtime, as time expired, his hand virtually just went into the basket to make the game saving block and make sure the Heat take game one.
And that block was just so electric.
Yeah.
That was the like poster moment of the NBA playoffs so far. Is it looks like it's a sure thing, and all of a sudden you just see that hand come up right at the end there. And that play, I think that encapsulates everything that the Heat have done. They've always been in that. They've always kept pushing, and that's why they've been such a good team this year.
Yeah, they're most definitely a bunch of hustlers, bunch of scrappers. But yeah, like you were saying about Eric Spoelstra, though, what are you guys' opinion about him and how he's been able to approach this year with Jimmy leading that team?
I think it's definitely shown a lot about how his skill set as a coach, where we've seen him, he's had some success when he's had superstar players, but now we're seeing almost on the flip side where he can almost get those same results, but with a different cast of players that may not be as top-heavy as the big three were
but he can definitely get a lot out of his depth players. And I think he's just really good at identifying different player strengths and weaknesses and getting those mismatches on the court, getting the right guy out in the right situation.
And I don't think there is an NBA coach who is as underrated as Spoelstra, just because when you look at the rings that he has, it's like he had the premier big three, what started the super team movement, them and then the Garnett Celtics. But people always will put a little asterisk by he has the ring, but look who he had. Any coach could have done that. But now is kind of like a new sort of proving ground for that, because this roster on paper should not have beaten the Bucks, should not be beating the Celtics, would have no chance against the Lakers or the Nuggets. But they've elevated to this position because of great leadership, both by the coach and then the veterans on this team. I think that they're just so well-rounded. I cannot get over how good they are and how much they exceeded my expectations. And I was high on them coming into the season. And so a lot of that does have to do with the leadership, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, it always feels like that everyone just discounts how important coaching is in the NBA. But for whatever reason, maybe it's because LeBron James really hasn't had a coach he's gone with in his whole career. But I think the Miami Heat are once again proving how important it is to have the right coach, because there really is the difference between making it to the conference final or losing in the first round.
And I think that's a lot because of how the NBA works is that there's a lot of big personalities, a lot of superstars in the NBA that kind of have more say over kind of what goes on behind the scenes than in most other leagues, I feel like. So when you're talking about coaching, it really does fall back to see that even with this roster and with no like super big stars, they are putting together a season that people have not seen.
And I think that is a really good point, what both you guys said, how this player empowerment movement that's gone on in the NBA in the last 15 years has really affected the way that people see the head coach. Because if you think about it, like the Warriors, nobody chalks up to, wow, you know what, Steve Kerr just really coached that team well. No, you always look at Steph and you look at Clay and KD and you're like, okay, those are the guys that got him there. But there's a lot of overlook that happens to the coaches that you wouldn't do to older teams. Like, you don't look at the Bulls and be like, you look at it and just ignore the contributions that Phil Jackson had to that team. And so we've kind of gotten away from giving coaches their due credit. Now, I'm not going to say that it's all the coach, because obviously he's not out there putting in 40 minutes and getting 30 points a game, but still you have to have that game plan. And you, more importantly, you have to have that leadership in the locker room. And so that's especially important now, as the job of the coach has become a little more overlooked.
Yeah, I think the coach really has to manage personalities. Carter talked about how the players, there definitely are a lot of big personalities in that league. Like, we've seen it before where just there, like towards the end of Kobe's run with the Lakers when they had Dwight Howard, like on paper, that should have been a great team. But just the guys couldn't stand each other in the locker room and they underachieved. So it takes the right coach to be in that room and take this wide range of personalities to get everybody to unite around one common goal.
Yeah, I agree about that, too, that the coach is kind of underlooked, because people think, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, we saw with the Bulls, you know, they think, oh, champion, we won, you know, that three-peat twice because of Michael Jordan. But, you know, it was because of things that Phil Jackson's done, and we've seen it with the Heat as well.
Triangle, baby, the triangle.
Yeah.
about the triangle.
Yeah, that perfecting that triangle offense, or was it defense? But trying to perfect that. But the coach should get a lot of credit, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are calling the shots. But as you mentioned, they're not on the court, but they do play an important role in trying to build that team chemistry so that they're not just playing for themselves, but they're playing together for the common goal of trying to bring home that Larry O'Brien trophy.
And Carter, as we're getting a little short on time, I do want to ask, because we've still got both conference finals going on right now. The Nuggets are looking pretty threatening to the Lakers' reign in the West. who do you see going into the finals and walking away with the trophy?
I think, okay, so this is what I think is going to happen. I think Boston is going to kind of just choke the rest of the series away. I think the Heat are going to perform well. Under pressure, they've been excellent. I think if a game goes down to the wire, that they will end up winning it. So I see the Heat going to the finals, and I see the Lakers beating out the Nuggets in that. I just don't see LeBron losing a playoff series, especially after what happened with the MVP voting. I think he's going to be angry. So I see them going to the finals, and then I see a 6 or 7 game series, possibly with the Heat coming out on top. I really don't think that people can knock them off their wave right now. They are just riding the hot hands, and they're doing everything right. Saying so, plus the what that'd be such a story, man. The Heat winning that against LeBron, that would be that'd be one for the books.
All sure. About getting hot at the right time.
Exactly. Yeah,
like you mentioned it, Joey. You said you called it that they were going to be the team to watch out for, and they were. But we'll see what happens. As we mentioned, we're recording on Wednesday night, so game 4 going on right now. But Carter, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking the NBA with us.
Thank you guys for having me.
No problem. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it'll be the best segment in sports talk radio, the Pick 6. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Man, this event is...
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. It's almost about time to end the show, but not before. It is the best segment in sports talk radio. Week 3 of the Pick 6. Taking a look at the standings. At the top, we got a 3-way tie in first place, all 9-3. Leo, Joey, and our faculty advisor, Steve Seats.
I'm just saying, me and Leo, GOAT status, obviously. S tier, we deserve DAC money for how we've been playing. Steve, I think it's just all luck. I think it's a fluke, and I think he's going to fizzle out here anytime soon.
And even to defend my 3-3 performance last week, after my strong 6-0 week 1, I consulted with my younger brother about my picks, since he watches way more football than me. And so the 3 picks I got wrong, that was all him.
That was all him.
This week it was all me, so back to Wilbur.
Leo has fired his assistant, also his younger brother.
I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but it was his fault, not mine.
Then I'm in 4th place, 7-5, but at least I'm not in last place, like the guest. 4-8, another 2-4 week.
One day, the guest will be good, but it will be long after our lifetimes. For now, they are the perennial bottom of the Pick 6.
Like the Cleveland Browns of the Pick 6. Like, they're trying to be good, but
they really want it. They signed Odell, they signed Jarvis, and they still can't get it done. But let's hop into these picks.
Let's get down to what we got. 6 entertaining games. First one, Miami Dolphins against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Primetime game, James Robinson. Miami's struggling. Robinson's on fire. Make it Mr. Robinson's neighborhood. Jacksonville's winner.
Yeah, Minshew Mania, baby. All day Jacksonville.
Gotta go with Jacksonville here. Miami's just so bad, it makes me angry. Like, there's nothing even fun about this team yet with Tua not even playing.
Just put Tua in.
That's all I care about.
Please.
But, so yeah, Jacksonville by a lot here.
Steve and our guest, Carter Getty, as well, picking Jacksonville. So we'll sweep the first one. Second one, 2-0 Chicago Bears against the Atlanta Falcons. They're playing in Atlanta. This was a tough one. Almost wanted to go against the Bears, but I'll give them one more week. I think it'll be a close one again, another heart attack spare.
The Bears are 2-0. They're undefeated, which makes them tied for the best team in the NFL. And that is the case until proven otherwise. So how can you pick against them? How can you pick against a 2-0 team? You can't. They can't. They don't know how to lose. They don't know how to lose. They don't know how to almost lose, but they don't know how to lose. Bears win it.
Bears just—it's been an emotional roller coaster this season, where both games it felt like at times they were going to lose, but they won. And I just don't trust the Falcons. Every year there's just so much hype. They got what 10 of 11 starters that were former first-round picks. I always want to think they're going to be great, but they're just still a Falcons. They just blew a 20-point lead last week to the Cowboys, so Bears are going to take this one.
Yeah, I think a lot of Falcons fans were getting flashbacks to a certain game where that also happened.
28-3.
Steve and Carter are both going with the Atlanta Falcons.
Wow. Maybe they're not as big of homers as we are here on the show, but they're going to be sorry when the Bears pull it out.
Next game, the Los Angeles Rams against the Buffalo Bills. Both are good teams, but I think with the Bills, the way they're going with Josh Allen, I think they're going to get a win in a close one at home.
This was also a really big toss-up for me. I don't know, but I think these are both teams I really like, too. Like, I like both these teams, but the Bills are so fun, and I think that Josh Allen just to Stephon Diggs combination that they've got going on is unreal, and then Devin Singletary is doing really good in the backfield. I just think that they've got a little bit more of a well-rounded team, especially on the defensive side, so I'm going to go Bills, but I think it'll be close.
I think the Bills are pretty much my sleeper team in that division in the AFC. Now that the Patriots might not be as good, I think they could really be a force to be reckoned with there this year, so I'm going to have to go with them over the Rams. Another team I do like, I think they're looking back in form, but I just think the Bills have so many things going for them right now.
Yeah, I was almost going to pick the Rams, but just the way they're going, they're not as consistent as they were with Jared Goff and when they had Todd Gurley. Steve going with the Rams, though. Carter going with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah,
so we're halfway home.
Steve's 1-2 at this point. Boy, just want to point it out.
Next game, it is the Dallas Cowboys against Let Russ Cook, the Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh.
Seattle had a nice victory, came down to the wire on that Cam Newton final play in the fourth, but I think they're playing at CenturyLink. They don't have the 12th man, but Seattle, I think, will get it done.
The 12th man is always there in spirit in Seattle, and I just think Seattle is such a better team than the Cowboys. Even though they won in Atlanta, or I guess against Atlanta last week, Atlanta has no defense whatsoever and a good offense. Seattle has a good offense and a good defense, so I think this will be no problem for the Seahawks.
And that's the group, guys, on this one with the Seahawks. I think they look very legit this year. They're looking back in championship form. Jamal Adams is making that defense look like the Legion of Boom again, so I think the Seahawks can take care of business here.
Yeah, we've been seeing it. Let Russ Cook. And it was interesting. He didn't even receive a single first-place vote for MVP.
He is the leader right now in Vegas odds for MVP, though. So he's finally getting some recognition 2 weeks into the 2020 season.
Yeah, it'll take him 7 years.
Honestly.
Steve going with the Seahawks. Carter as well going with the Seahawks. Then we move to the Sunday night football game. It is the Green Bay Packers against the New Orleans Saints. Saints kind of let me down on Monday night, losing to Gruden's Raiders. But the way Green Bay's been able to go over 40 points, Aaron Jones, Valdes-Scantling, Alan Lazard, and even with Devontae Adams when he was in Green Bay, they've just proven they're unstoppable, and I'm sticking with them.
Freddie did mention John Gruden. Can you give us your Green Bay prediction in the John Gruden voice?
Play what, man? I love Aaron Rodgers, man. Play what? He's a good football player, man.
Thank you.
Packers,
okay.
Man.
All right, I'm also going Green Bay.
Gotta go with the Packers here, too. I mean, it's pretty scary how good Aaron Rodgers has been playing this year. And I gotta say, as not a Saints fan, but I always loved playing with the Saints in Madden back in the day. It's sad to see Drew Brees get old. He just doesn't look like the same quarterback anymore. And I think that's going to hurt the Saints in the long run.
It's Taysom time in New Orleans.
Yeah, well, Steve, though, pretty confident about the Saints' ability to upset the
really?
Packers. Really? He's taking the Saints.
Oh, my God. Steve, that's 2-4. Come
on. The guest is taking Green
Brother.
Bay. Now we got our final game. We got Monday Night Football. This is a grudge match. This could be the AFC Championship
This
game.
Is a barn burner right here.
This one, the Kansas City Chiefs against the Baltimore Ravens. This one was one of the more difficult ones I had to pick, but I think just the way Lamar Jackson can go, he can run the football with that offense. I think Baltimore is going to pull it out.
I agree, but I went way back and forth. I think what made the decision for me was how the Chargers kind of had Kansas City's number in the first half last week. And the Chargers are not a great team by any means, but the Ravens are. So I think that Baltimore is really going to be able to come out, give it to the Chiefs, even though, you know, defending Super Bowl champs. But, yeah, I think the Ravens are going to take this one.
I'm going to go with the Chiefs here. I just think they certainly won that game last week because the Chargers were playing. They weren't going for the win in overtime by not going for the touchdown there. But I just think the Chiefs are one of the best, most complete team in the NFL. We saw Harrison Butker last week kick 3 field goals of more than 50 yards. I think they are just very complete. And I don't totally trust the Ravens defense yet.
All right, so he's going Kansas City.
Wow, Leo.
Steve as well going with Kansas City, and so is the guest. They're going Kansas City. But that'll just about do it for this week's edition of the Red Zone. Just to recap what we talked about after we dealt with our technical difficulties, we talked about the release of the NBC basketball schedule. Men's and women's basketball finally going to be back at Redbird Arena. Sadly, the fans won't be there, though. We've also got Missouri Valley Football Conference. They're going to go on. We got 4 home games, 4 away games. Then we brought Carter Getty on to talk about the NBA playoffs and how the Heat are 1 win away from the finals. Then it was the best segment of Sports Talk Radio, the Pick 6. Well, that'll just about do it. Once again, if you missed any part of the show, it'll be online shortly. You've been listening to The Red Zone on Pulse Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Yo, it's Billie Eilish.
This is Hit Music.
What's going on, guys? It's Post Malone.
WZND LP Bloomington Normal is 103.3 and WZND.com.
All my hits are right here.
WZND LP Bloomington Normal is 103.3 and WZND.com.
With a flip phone, just like you, like I like fingers in your mouth, up on the sun, playing drums with a bleach bone.